Whatever we plant in our subconscious mind and nourish with repetition and emotion will one day become a reality. My name is Andrea, and this is Adult Child. Welcome back to Adult Child, where we take a deep dive into the impact of growing up in a dysfunctional family. Ahoy, my fine-ass shit shows. And for anybody who's new, how you feeling about that? That's how we filter them out, folks, right? Like, we filter it out. Like, we're going to just start it off that way. I'm just going to call you fine-ass shit shows. And anybody who's not okay with that, well, then we know this ain't the podcast for them. For any new listeners, I'm Andrea. I am a fine ass shit show myself. And I just want to first start by saying thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. We had a huge April in downloads. I had over 120,000 downloads. Like, that blows my mind. Just little old me here in the closet with my mattress pad sounding board. I feel so incredibly honored for your support and for you guys. You know, it's charity work for you guys. It's charity work for you guys listening to me every single week. Thank you for being an adult child and for relating to my stories. And I pinch myself every day a little bit when I think about that this is where life has taken me. And especially whenever I was sitting in bed the other night and a message from we have our WhatsApp chat group within the Patreon community, just a message notification popped up at the top. I was like, holy shit, girl. Like, look what you've created. But I'm still waiting for you all to abandon me. I mean, I joke in the Patreon groups that I'm just waiting for the one day when I log on and everyone's realized that I'm fucking nuts and everyone cancels on the same day. So I'm waiting for the day when I like go to check my download numbers and it's like two downloads because you all have collectively realized that I'm nuts. You guys have probably already realized that. I did just want to share a tidbit that was shared in today's group. Today's group was on fire. Shitshow Drea shared something really powerful that I wanted to share with you all. So I can't remember if it was her therapist or her sponsor or a friend, essentially wrote up this guidebook that Drea then provided to her boyfriend. And it was basically like, if you want the best out of me, if you want the best out of this relationship, like, here are the four things that Drea needs in order for this to go well for you. Okay, get your pens out. Number one, predictability. Number two, structure. Number three, good communication. And number four, unconditional positive regard. I love that. So again, predictability, structure, good communication, and unconditional positive regard. I think I'm checking those boxes. You let me know if I'm not. So today we are joined by Maria Jansen. So she is a rapid transformational therapist and coach. She is a clinical hypnotherapist. She is an inner child work specialist. Sorry for my Outlook ding ding you just heard. And she is the Outlook ding ding. The Outlook ding ding. And she is a breathwork facilitator. And she refers to herself as a trauma alchemist. And so this is a powerful conversation. One of the things that we discuss and one thing that she's super passionate about is looking at and reprogramming the subconscious beliefs that we hold. So I've been reading this book called Reinventing Your Life, The Breakthrough Program to End Negative Behavior and Feel Great Again. It's by Jeffrey Young and Janet Klosko. I'll include it in the show notes. Somebody mentioned this book. I can't remember who it was. I want to say maybe it was Shit Show Rachel. But so basically, what this book is about is, it is about these subconscious beliefs, but the way that they refer to it is as life traps. So they say, a life trap is a pattern that starts in childhood and reverberates throughout life. It began with something that was done to us by our families or by other children. Long after we leave the home we grew up in, we continue to create situations in which we were mistreated, ignored, put down, or controlled, in which we fail to reach our most desired goals. Life traps determine how we think, feel, act, and relate to others. They trigger strong feelings such as anger, sadness, and anxiety. Even when we appear to have everything, social status, an ideal marriage, the respect of people close to us, career success, we are often unable to savor life or believe in our accomplishments. So within the book, they have identified several of the most common life traps. And so I'm going to go through these and you see which of these is speaking to you. I'm going to just read to you what the core belief is related to each, but I'll include an article that goes into more depth into descriptions of them. So abandonment is the belief that I am unlovable. Mistrust and abuse. The belief here is people who love me betray me, or people cannot be trusted. Dependence. The belief is I am incompetent or I am helpless. Vulnerability. The belief is the world is an unsafe place. Emotional deprivation. I am unwanted and unlovable. Next is social exclusion. I'm different, unacceptable, and socially undesirable. Defectiveness. I'm defective, bad, inferior, and unwanted. Failure. I'm inadequate, incompetent, stupid, inept, or a failure. Subjugation. The belief is it is selfish and can hurt others if I put myself first. Others are more important than I am, or I have no value. I know plenty of you can relate to that. Unrelenting standards. I'm never good enough. I'm only acceptable and lovable if I'm perfect and extremely successful. Again, I know many of you relate to that. And then last but not least is entitlement. Probably less of us struggle with this one. I'm special and I'm superior. I mean, I would say that the belief that I'm special is totally the goal here. Maybe not I'm superior. So when we really think about these core wounds of being an adult child, and I just made a reel about this yesterday on Instagram, it's this tunnel vision. Basically, whatever we internalize about ourselves as kids becomes this tunnel vision for us. So if we ingrain that we are unlovable or we're defective, we're inherently flawed, we spend the rest of our lives subconsciously searching for any evidence that is in support of this. We spend our lives unconsciously searching in every fucking nook and cranny for anything that may align with these faulty beliefs that we hold about ourselves. Whilst doesn't sound right, but whilst sounds like a dance. The waltz. The whilst. Whilst. Okay, whilst ignoring anything that that goes against that. So I will say that it is absolutely possible for us to break through these and to reprogram these beliefs, and for us to go from feeling like I am unlovable to, you know, I am worthy and deserving of love, or I'm defective to, you know, I'm a person with worth and value. I've had a few things come up where I'm really able to see my growth. And I think it's so important that we acknowledge those moments. We really, 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 really need to soak it in when we're able to see our progress and the way in which we've transformed. So give yourself a pat on the back. So let's get on with the damn show. But first, so here's the dealio, folks, with the new community. So you can still damn the join Patreon probably will have like 24 hours after listening to this. So I'm hoping to be sending out the invitations for the new community to existing Patreon members, hopefully by Thursday. At that point, you can still join the Patreon, but you're not going to have access to the support group. So if you just want to be a supporter, you can do that. The new community, the shit show, it's going to be for, I'm going to work out all the kinks for the next month or so with existing members. So anybody who's already in the Patreon will have the opportunity to join the new community once it's ready in a couple days. And then we're just going to work out all the kinks, and I will then be opening it up for new members, for all you new members, in, you know, a month or so. So that means if you want to get in on this shit, hey, you person who has been wanting to join for like, you know, over a year, all of you people that have been listening for a long ass time, I know you're out there. How about you just do it now? How about you just do it now? Or if not, you can wait a month. And you're missing out on an amazing community for a whole damn month if you do that. So head on over to patreon.com/adultchild. I guess I should say what the hell it is if anybody's new. So this is where I host 3 weekly Zoom support groups. We're going to be increasing this to 5 a week with the new community. I need to give a shout out to all the new Patreon folks. I feel like it's been a little while since I've done that. So thank you, thank you, thank you to these fine ass shit shows. Rihanna, Annika, Isla, Rini, Shanalee, I apologize if I'm not saying that right, Natasha, Mariah, Alexandra, Ashley, Queen of the Slipstream, I'm into it, Heidi, Anita, Susan, Leah, Jacqueline, Andrea, but we're really hoping it's Andrea, Kenzie, ZF, Karen, and Francis. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. The rest of y'all can go follow suit for, you know, time is limited, folks. Patreon.com/adultchild. Next, give me a little follow on the Insta, on the TikTok, @adultchildpod. And last but not least, give me a damn 5-star rating on Apple and Spotify. This is a requirement. I can't express that more strongly, okay? Give me a damn 5-star review. The truth of the matter, my dear shit shows, is that there is a huge overlap in those of us who grew up in a dysfunctional family and those of us who are suffering from ADHD. I myself got diagnosed with ADHD about a year ago, and getting this diagnosis and treating this diagnosis has made such a difference in my productivity and getting shit done. Now, let me tell you about Done. Done is an online ADHD care platform where you can get all the resources you need to help manage your ADHD. Take a free 1-minute assessment and book an appointment with a licensed ADHD clinician as soon as the next day. Get continuous care, one-click refills, insurance coverage, and 24/7 care team support with Done for just $79 a month and pharmacy copays as low as $0. Visit get.donefirst.com/podcast to learn more. Again, that is get.donefirst.com/podcast. Done. Turn ADHD into your strength. Today, we have a trauma alchemist, Maria Jansen. I fucking love that term. What do you say when say, what the hell is a trauma alchemist?
Well, I called myself since since a year or so, I call myself that because clients have called me that, not a trauma alchemist, but an alchemist, mm-hmm. for such a long time, over and over, that I was like, okay, well, I guess that's what I am. Mm-hmm. It's because I help them alchemize their past into inner peace, success, and abundance, what they are looking for. And often I work with clients who have done so much work already, but things are still not changing, like mm-hmm. in their life the way they wanted to. That it's like a finally they can alchemize their past into inner peace, success and abundance. It's a really fast process, actually, and where they're all my skills that I've learned over, I don't know how many years of my own healing and being trained, basically my whole life comes into it. And I'm also divinely guided. My intuition, all of this comes into it, and it becomes alchemy. It's just transforming. Mm-hmm. And of course, I use all my tools, but this whole combination is that my clients are always so thrilled how fast the transformation happens, actually.
Turning it into gold.
Yes, exactly. That's what I believe. We can all turn our pain into power, into gold. And I believe that in every pain is a gain, Billy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. That's the core message of this podcast.
I know.
Had you heard the term adult child? Were you familiar with that term?
No, I haven't. I mean, now I know, but before I knew about your podcast, I hadn't heard about it. No.
Would you consider your upbringing dysfunctional?
Oh, highly dysfunctional. Abusive. Yeah. Very abusive. I had a abusive patriarchal father, who sexually abused me and my sister, and physically abused my brothers, and emotionally abused us all. And I had a very weak mother. It was very dysfunctional. But on the outside, my parents are business owners, and on the outside, it looked all really great.
What is your earliest childhood memory?
Oh, that's such a good question. Let me think. Well, I have one memory, and I don't know how old I am in that. It's like I'm standing in front of my father, and he is yelling at me. It's like young. It's like maybe eight or 9 or 10 or something. He's yelling at me, and I'm peeing in my pants because I'm so afraid, and I really don't know what I've done wrong. That's kind of the earliest memory that I have.
When you talk about how things look so nice and pretty from the outside, but was there an understanding that things weren't normal?
Oh, you know, I don't even know when that started, but I remember ever since I remember, I knew something was not right. It was not supposed to be like that. And I also always knew at some point I would have to face that all again and have to look at it. And I also, it's so fascinating to me that I'm working with the subconscious mind with people today, and that it's so important to look at the root cause of something that we experience in our life. When I was like 12 or something, and my uncle was in and out, like
psychiatrist?
Yeah, in a hospital, because he was manic depressive, and he was taking so much medication. I don't want to speak against it, but he was taking so much medication that you couldn't talk to him anymore, really. Mm-hmm. I was like standing there as this 12-year-old girl or 11 next to my mom and telling her, you can't put him into this hospital all the time. There must be a reason why he feels like that and why he has this. You have to look at that and not just drug him with medications. And this is so vivid in my memory. And of course, nobody listened to me. So I always knew that was not right. And that was not how it was supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. And what about, what was the relationship like with your siblings?
Well, I was the oldest of five. And I have not many memories about all of that. The only thing I remember is that I was the one who had to look after them because my parents were busy with their business often. And I had a sister, which is now today my best friend, so to speak, and my soul sister, and she's also a trauma therapist. It's so interesting. And she was 3 years younger than me, and I was teasing her. I was not a nice sister often. And we only became closer when the age gap, I mean, it's not so much, but when it closed, like when we were like 18, 19, and we talked about all our experience at that point. That's when it started. But before that, it was, we weren't really close.
And so was there like a pivotal moment where you feel like your trauma really came to the surface?
Yeah. It came to the surface in a sense when I was studying at the university, and I was like, I mean, it was already always present in a way that I wouldn't raise my hand in school. I was just so afraid that I would say something wrong. But then when I was a student, like 19 or 20 or something, I started having bulimia, not like really intense, but on and off like a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I knew that wasn't supposed to be like that. And then when I was studying, I was a really, really good student and I would have the best grade, but I would never think I would be doing good in the next exam. I was always fearing to fail. And I was like completely nervous, sitting there all the time, learning, studying. And in my first bachelor exam, I was really good. I was blacking out in the examination, which was face-to-face. There's a name for that I can't recall right now in English. So that's when I was just sitting there.
Dissociating?
Yeah, I was completely, no, not disassociating. I just meant the term for this kind of examination. Mm-hmm. I was just completely blanking out. And the professor took me out and said, hey, Maria, you know all of this, and you really have to learn to stay present and be able to activate and access this in you. And that's when I knew I really have to work with that. And then I was doing the second part, the master's. And during that time, I was originally a teacher. Mm-hmm. And then you had to do this lessons. And in the back, six people would sit there and watch you do that. And afterwards, you would have a conversation about it. I was so nervous, I could not speak. And all of that led me to, okay, now is the moment where I really have to get some help. And that's when I started. And that's when I started talk therapy. And I was like learning like the dysfunction of our family. Everything I had felt now became a name. And I it gave me this awareness and a little bit of processing also. But then after that, I did, what did I do after that? I mean, what I then did for a very long time is inner child work. Mm-hmm. I have like a whole box like full of, I don't know, 15 journals just writing with my parts. And I did that in group in one-to-one sessions. And
let's dive into that.
Yeah.
So what was that process like for you? And did you think it was weird when you first started it?
No, it felt really natural to me. I don't know why. I think part of my coping mechanism was, and I'm also connected, was to always have this meta perspective. Mm. I'm really able to look through things easily. And I was able to do that for myself too. I mean, it was a dissociation and mm-hmm. to some extent also. So mm-hmm. it wasn't so difficult for me to separate from that part or see myself as the adult Maria and then the child part. And that process was I had done so much therapy already before, but through that, I found real self-love. Mm-hmm. I could so feel my inner girls, and I did a very particular form of it. It was so helpful for me.
What was it specifically?
Yeah, it doesn't exist anymore. It's similar to internal family systems, but each part... there was a part that was holding the fear. The other part was holding the pain. The other part was holding the rage. Mm-hmm. With different parts for the different emotions. But it didn't really, so that's what I didn't like about it. It wasn't really so clear to differentiate sometimes. So that's why I wouldn't do it like that with my clients today. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that was the huge gift I got from that. You know, I had three children, and my husband at the time, I'm divorced from him and I'm remarried, but my husband at the time, he didn't want to do the work. And I knew when I started this type of work that it would lead to a separation. And I worked 6 months before I actually asked that question, after he also had betrayed me. But, you know, I needed to work 6 months beforehand, before I could hold for myself that we would maybe separate and I would be a single mom of three very, very little kids. And that was thanks to this inner child work that I was able to hold that and do that. That was really crucial, a crucial point for me.
Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming that with this, like the, you said it's similar to internal family systems.
Yeah.
So what were some of those? So it's like identifying, like you said, those girls inside of you. So what were some of those? What were some of those girls?
Well, it was, oh my gosh, it's now a long time ago that I did that. But they all got names, and I established a connection with them in a moment after a trigger. I would go in and talk to myself and ask myself what was the feeling, and find this deep feeling or this feeling, and then would write as that feeling. And out of that, the separation happened, and I could be there for that part of me. And the fear was a big one. Fear was always a big one, because my whole childhood, I lived like in a war zone, because my father was so unpredictable and I was hypervigilant at all times. So I was so fearful on one hand, and also brave on the other. But yeah, that fear was a big one. And she was afraid to fail an exam. She was, you know, that's what was would be triggering that. And then we would process with this inner child. I would process all the fear from my childhood. Mm-hmm. It was really helpful. Like also in this process of separation from my husband, like the fear was, I would like not be able to survive that and be a single mother of three children. And I mean, it was this irrational fear. And by holding
her, felt so real.
It felt so real. That's the thing. It feels so real. But because I did this work and did all the writing and separation and all of that, I was able to do it. I mean, I was able to do it. And otherwise, it would have completely overwhelmed me. It was still a big thing, but I was okay with it.
What was it like walking through that?
Through the divorce, you mean? Mm-hmm. Well, it was clear for me that we couldn't continue together, because my life's journey was all about healing myself. And at that time, I don't know. At that time, I already knew that I was supposed to do deeper work with people than what I did. I was an educator in a master's program for student teachers at the university, and I felt I couldn't reach the deeper problems these students had that caused them to not be a good teacher. Mm-hmm. So I already knew I wanted to do that. So for me, it was clear this whole, my whole life journey is about that and paying it forward at some point. And he was just like, we had done therapy together, groups together.
Were you still over in Germany?
Yeah, that was all in Germany. I'm only living here since 10 years. And he was saying, when I, at some point, asked him the question, will you ever open your heart for me again? And he said, no. And that was clear for me then, that's not going to work. And I said, we could work more on our relationship. I really was willing to do that. But he said, no, I'm done with that. I just want to be happy. And I'm like, okay, well, that's not how it works for me. So I just said, I guess we are separated then. And then I didn't have such an emotional reaction to the fact that I'm not with this man, that I wasn't with this man anymore. But what I had to really grieve about is that I could give not my children not the functional, happy family constellation that I so wanted to give them. Oh my gosh, it was so difficult. It was a lot of grieving about that. My daughter, my youngest, she was just 1 year old then, or one and a half. And I mean, I realized that I was doing it differently than my mom. I was happy about it. She always stayed in the super dysfunctional marriage, and I got out of it. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't able to give them what I thought would be best for them. At that point, I was so conditioned to, I give them the happy family with a good relationship. But yeah, that was a big grieving process for me.
How old were your kids at that point?
Yeah, my youngest was 1.5, and 4.5, and then, 3.5, and then 6.5. Six, 3, and 1.
Wow.
Yeah, it was big. Oh my gosh.
And did he stay present in their life?
Yeah, he did. I mean, he did. He would, in the beginning, he would come to our house and bring them to bed together. And so we did that for a while. And then he had his own place like a few streets away, and they would see him every 2 weekends. That's what it was. Unfortunately, it wasn't more, but that's how we did it.
Mm-hmm. They're over here with you now, right?
All my kids are over here with me now. Here, yeah.
Nice.
And he stayed over there.
So when did you dive into the subconscious mind stuff?
Oh my gosh. I love talking about it. You know, I have done 20 years of healing or 30 years of healing. And then after my big collapse in 2015, I still felt that there was this calling. It felt almost like a soul calling within me, like, that's what I'm meant to do this lifetime. And if I don't figure out what this is, I am at the end of my life. I can't look at myself because it will feel like I failed somehow.
Well, that's how very much like my experience too. When I hit the big bottom, it was like, there's something greater for me here. And the struggle and the frustration that I felt like in the process of like, when am I going to figure it out? When am I going to figure it out?
Yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about. And the struggle in this and the knowing that there is supposed to be something, and at the same time, not being able to figure it out. And then the only solution for me was trusting the divine timing and surrendering. It will all unfold. But boy, was that a struggle. But that's what I learned in the process, like this trusting the divine timing of it all. Yeah, so then I started out as a sound healer. That's what I had learned then after learning all this inner child stuff. And a spiritual counselor, because I also had a spiritual awakening in 2013. So, but the thing is, people found me through my website somehow, but I would not put myself out there at all. I was like, I couldn't believe it. It was like, why is this happening after so much healing? I'm still not putting myself out there. I've still this fear of being seen. And of course, I knew where it would come, where it came from in my childhood. I knew all of that. Mm-hmm. And I felt pain around that. But the cool thing is, or what I then discovered is that I did not touch the deep beliefs that are imprinted in my subconscious mind. And yeah, so I was like, I was turning it over to the divine again, saying, I'm open to the missing piece. There must be a missing piece. And that's when I learned about subconscious healing. I stumbled over it. I don't know. I was looking up something for someone else, and then I stumbled over it. And that's when I tried it and thought, oh my God, that's like so amazing. Because when you access the subconscious mind, you get so directly to the root, the cause, the reason for why you have this problem. Mm-hmm. And that was nothing new that came up then, but the frame around it, the headline was completely different. For me, it had to do with this fear of being seen, of course, from my childhood, because it was not safe to be myself. And the most important thing is that then I discovered all the beliefs. It's not safe to be seen. Being successful is a struggle. If you are successful, all these beliefs. Mm-hmm. And
what was the process of getting to those?
That's what I do today with my clients as a rapid transformational therapist, and I bring everything
else. Is that Marissa Peer's thing?
Yeah. Okay. That's
her thing. You want to explain what it is?
Yeah, it's a mix of NLP, it's a mix of psychotherapy, it's a mix of cognitive behavioral therapy and psychotherapy. And it contains different processes into which I then bring my own processes. And it helps you to whatever problem you have in your life, whatever pattern you are facing in your life, that's most likely the symptom, a symptom of trauma. You can access your subconscious mind by getting into a light hypnotic state and then ask your subconscious mind, what's the root, the cause, the reason for that. And the fascinating thing about our subconscious minds is that it all, there he is.
Kiki.
My God, he is so cute.
Yes, he's a little baby. Look, she has a little, she has a nubby tail. There you go, bye.
Yeah, where was I? Oh, yeah.
The root.
So subconscious mind exactly brings always up the what is ready to be healed. I've not experienced, not ever, with no client I've experienced that nothing came up or that there was nothing we could get. So then the process is like the situation is then going to be explored. The pain around that most likely traumatic experience, even though, you know, we can define what trauma really is, but there's healing around that. And that's where the inner child work comes in also, finding that younger part of you and rescuing it out of that situation, so to speak. Our younger parts, they are all stuck in these old situations, and then come and rescue that part, do healing around it, and then discover the beliefs that were attached to that. You know, if children always think there must be something wrong with them. It's just too dangerous to question their parents because they are so dependent on them. So they would never do that. So they always think it's their fault. And therefore, I must not be lovable. I must be unworthy. I must be not good enough. I must be, you know, I don't matter. These core beliefs. And then we extract them out of the system, so to speak, and rewire the subconscious mind with new empowering beliefs according to what that particular person needs to hear. That's the process, like really roughly described. Yeah, and that, so I learned that then. And that's when I realized, oh my gosh, that's the missing puzzle piece for myself, my own healing, and also in my toolbox. And I combine it with breath work, with sound healing, and extend the inner child work a little bit. So it's cool. It's like so transformative so quickly. What I've learned is it doesn't have to take like 30 years like it did for me. It actually can go faster.
That's good to know.
Yeah, really. It is. It's really like that. You know, it's not always like that. But, you know, I had once a client who was sexually abused in so many instances. And she came to me. She's also a therapist. And she had heard that I do a lot of trauma stuff. So she reached out and said, I knew that you were the one to help me. And her problem was she didn't want sex with her husband. She would never wear feminine things or put on lipstick. And it was 1 month of work together that changed all of it and then healed her trauma around that. And I mean, I'm working now with a client where it will take 2 months or 3 months, but it's like, it's so transformative because you get to the root, you heal what needs to be healed, and you change the beliefs. It's so amazing.
I love that. Yeah. I want to circle back to what you said about, and it's something that I talk about often on the podcast about this, how it's so scary for kids to think that it's their parents that's the problem. And so we internalize it and view it as our problem.
I don't think children know this consciously up until a certain age. Like, I knew it when I was like 9 or 10, more 10, I guess, but not before. It's just, I think I've not ever experienced any of my clients or anybody I talk to that it was earlier. Because we are like so dependent on them, and we are so open. We are still in this state where everything impacts us so much on this subconscious level. And we are, our brains are just developing. It's like, I don't think that it's safe for a child to do so. As a child, we cannot feel all the emotions, and it's just too much because, as Peter Levine says, you know, the empathetic witness is missing that feel with us whatever needs to be felt. And then it becomes so overwhelming that we need to dissociate. That's what I did. I completely dissociated from my body, especially in the sexual domain. And for other people, it's numbing them with drugs or alcohol or so. It's, yeah, it's so, so common. And for other people, it's more subtle, the coping mechanism.
What was so challenging for me, it's like recognizing that consciously, I didn't think that I was unlovable or that I was less than. Like, I would have considered myself somebody with like high self-esteem and high self-worth, but my actions clearly showed otherwise. And I think sometimes when the abuse and neglect and that stuff is a lot more subtle.
Yes, that's when that happens.
It can be very difficult for people to realize that they even have these subconscious beliefs, you know?
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with that. I have a lot of people that come to me that say, I don't have trauma. I don't have trauma. And they are really hesitant. You know, there's also a process I use where I give them the chance to express their anger or their hurts toward that person that originated that. And they would not do that because they can't blame their parents, so to speak. That it feels like blame. So a lot of people are not aware of that. And that's usually what you just said, when it's more subtle and it's not the big trauma like abuse and big abandonment. I absolutely agree. And, you know, you thought that you are having a lot of self-esteem, that you have high self-esteem, but your actions were different. And for me, it was the other way around. I did not have high self-esteem at all, but my results would always show I'm a smart person, but I was would always think I'm not. And it's different for different people, and shame is really at the bottom of it all. That's what.
Talk about your relationship with your husband now. Like, what has that been like for you?
Well, he came into my life pretty, like, rather quickly after, you know, I was separated. I was not thinking about that at all. And I was, yeah, he was doing the same healing work I was doing.
I love that.
Yeah. And
that's how y'all met?
That's how we met, in our group in Hamburg.
Oh, I love that.
I would come from my hometown, would drive there every weekend, and he would go from Switzerland up to Hamburg every once a month or something.
He's Swiss.
He is Swedish originally, and also then he became also Swiss. Yeah. So, and I would never have been with him because he's not the type of man I used to like if it wasn't in that environment. And I had the support I had in that moment to really look behind all of the, I had so many, no, I don't, and blah, blah, blah. I had so many, like, so much resistance to it. But he stayed like consistent. And, you know, once when I noticed, I was talking with him on the phone every day for a while. And I called my friend who lived around the corner. Oh, there's this man. I think he's interested in me. And she said, oh, Maria, that's so great. Just enjoy the process.
And imagine that. What the fuck does that mean?
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, I'm scared. I don't know what I feel about it. And self-trust was a big piece for me also to heal. So I wouldn't trust my own feelings, really. And then it didn't feel like, oh my God, that's the love of my life. Mm-hmm. It was more like I was after these calls with him, I was running through my house, jumping, everything can heal. Because he was always inviting me to just be myself and be honest and speak out all my concerns I had about him and me. It was that in itself was healing, but it's also we are still together. What we had also several separations in between. It's not easy, and it's always something that we have to work on because we are so different in our communication levels, not levels, but in our way of communicating. And it's a lot of work. It stays a challenge, but it's also rewarding to have someone who has the same values and who sees self-improvement or healing also as his journey.
So, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so important.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Yeah.
So let's talk about self-sabotage.
Yeah. Wow. Self-sabotage. It's also a protection mechanism. It's something that we do because for a part of us, it's not safe where we want to go. So we sabotage ourselves to stay in the same place, what is familiar. Our mind will always bring us back to what's familiar. And familiar has been to whatever it might be for everybody, it's different. Mm-hmm. So the sabotage then is an attempt to stay in the same place. And only if you look at the root, the cause, the reason for that and heal that, you will be able to change that in the long run. You know, for example, someone who procrastinates like constantly, there's a reason because where you want to go, that requires growth, let's say, and it's something new. It's a new terrain or so. So for this part of us that doesn't want us to go there because it doesn't feel safe, mm-hmm. it will do everything to sabotage. So it can stay in the safe place and it can stay safe because these parts of us, they also grew up in this toxic environment. They haven't realized yet that we are grown-ups now and that we can handle our lives better than when we were children. That's usually when these protection mechanisms form. Is my experience from working with so many clients. And when I ask them then in this subconscious healing session, how old are you? When did you form? It's always during those childhood years. And these parts just have to learn that we are adults now, that we are able to take care of ourselves, and that we actually want to go there where we are now procrastinating to go. And that it's safe. We have to convince them that we are able to handle that. And once that's happening in this subconscious healing environment, let's say, it changes. It really changes. And that's what self, so, I mean, I could talk about it more, but yeah, that's like the gist of it.
So I was looking at the little handout thing on self-sabotage, and the one thing that you had was, on developing a journaling practice.
Yeah, for me it has been, and for my clients also, it's like a it's a process of clearing and coming out the other side. I don't even, there's a certain word for it. Catharsis is the German word. I don't know the English for it.
Catharsis.
Oh, yeah, that's the word. Process. It can, and you know, to ask the question, so what am I actually, like in connection to self-sabotage, what am I actually afraid of? What's like below the surface of what's happening? Mm-hmm. And then let this, whatever that is, to write about it. I'm afraid, blah, 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 people will reject me or whatever it might be. And to write about it. And then the next step could be to ask, where do I know this feeling from? and then allow this feeling to come up and then write about that feeling. And then, you know, to go into communication with that part. That's where we are starting a little bit of inner child work then. For me, that's really helpful. Today, I do it not that much anymore because I do this all internally. And for some people, it's easier to do it that way. I have one client who just goes on walks and talks to herself and feels everything on walks. Everybody's different, but it can be really helpful to just while you're writing to let it all come out. And it's like speaking out things loudly. Sometimes you only understand things the moment you tell another person about
it. That's why it's so important, right? Like to get those thoughts out of our head.
Exactly. And that's why the paper can be so beneficial. I mean, I love it. It was the thing for me to do journaling, and especially with my inner parts. But I get that it's also difficult for some people to do that.
No, it's been, you know, I've been trying to journal with my inner child. The part that I struggle with is in the response part.
Yeah.
So like her talking back to me, it feels, I'm not quite sure if it's coming from her, but what I've noticed is, so I've been putting that aside, and then she's coming to me, like when I'm in the middle of doing something, you know, she'll tell me, and I know it's coming from her. I can't remember if I shared this with you, but I had an experience where I had been journaling about how she feels about my procrastination. And when I say, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z the next day, and I don't do it. And what she told me, she said, it feels like when my mom would promise me that she was going to stop drinking and she wouldn't, you know?
Yeah. Exactly. It's so important to take these relationships with our inner girls or inner children seriously, and that what we all lose is trust. It's such a big piece of the healing. And if we don't treat it as a real relationship where we are accountable and responsible to stick to our like promises, they are kind of forgiving, but only to a certain point. I remember that from my process, that happened a couple of times. And she was like so disappointed, so sad, and it triggered all the old things. And we dealt with that. And I really had to learn to be that accountable and really hold it as a relationship with an abandoned, deeply wounded little child that I meet out on the street that has nobody to talk to or be with. And yeah, eventually it worked out, but it was a process. Yeah.
Are your parents still alive?
My father passed away last year, but my mom is still alive. Yeah.
And so what transpired from the relationship with your parents as you grew up?
Well, you know, after I found out about processed and talked about the abuse from my father.
Was that that wasn't like a repressed thing? Like you had, like, that was something that you were always aware of.
I knew it. I knew that that happened, but I never talked about it and didn't even tell my mom, because I, of course, knew subconsciously or intuitively that she wouldn't stand next to me and say, hey, this is not okay.
Do you think she was not aware?
No, I don't know how many times it happened, but she was not aware. I did a lot of also family constellation work for like many years. Mm-hmm. And in these processes, it came out that sexual abuse has such a long history in both my family lines from my mom and my dad. And so, yeah. And one, when I was then an adult and it came up in my talk therapy, and I had once a meeting with my sister and my brother, and my parents with the other siblings were skiing, and we were at the house, at the family house, and we were all telling each other our horror stories with our father from childhood. And that's when my sister and I both told my brother that happened to us.
And did you know that had happened to your sister?
At that point, I knew about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We were like in our early 20s. And, that's when my brother stopped talking to my dad for a while. And my dad calls me and asks, what's going on? My brother is not talking anymore. And I'm like, I don't know. You know, I don't want to talk about it. You should know what you did to me. And he would just ignore it. And he would tell me, that's something your therapist put into your head, or you dreamt it. And, you know, and so I stopped. I had no contact for a year or two with him. And I told my mom, I want to have contact with you. That I don't talk to him doesn't mean that I can't have contact with you. And then she said, no, if you don't have contact to him, I'm not having contact with you either. And that's when I knew, and it became apparent to me that, like, I didn't ever have a mom who would stand behind us, who would, you know, speak up. You can't do that to them. And even in that moment, she wouldn't. She just told me, oh, my father did that to me too. That's nothing bad. Like, you know, it's like she hadn't dealt with her own abuse. So she couldn't deal with her girls, with her children. So I had a little funeral. Like, I mean, my mom is still alive, but that time I really processed the fact that my mom didn't really exist for me. And then in the process of doing all the inner child work, I started having contact with him again, and we agreed to disagree. My father and I said, okay, that's my reality. If you have another reality, okay, and we will find a minimum level of communication, which we did. Then I did the inner child work for so many years, and that's when I realized that I'm in contact with this man is neglecting one part of myself. So I stopped having contact again and said, well, unless you apologize and own up to what you did, I will never have contact with you again. And then he did that at some point, but it didn't feel truly genuine, really. But we had like the most minimal contact. And, you know, then I moved here and I have seen him twice in the last 10 years. And with my mom, I'm in loose contact. You know, I talk to her, and I'm very connected to my sister and my other siblings. But yeah, they are just on a different consciousness level. She will never get it. It's just who she is. I love this quote. Life shrinks or expands with the courage you have, or something. I don't remember. It shrinks or expands in proportion to your courage. And my mom is not a courageous woman. Mm-hmm. And her horizon, like her life, is like so small. And I love my parents. That never stops. But it's not an easy relationship. And it's good that I didn't have the contact for this time.
When you said the thing about the when you did the family constellation, is this like inner family systems where you're like connecting in, or you actually did like genealogy stuff, or how did you find out that the sexual abuse was on both sides of the family?
Yeah, it's this process. It's Bert Hellinger. It's a German person who made this process really big. And it also exists here. I know people doing that here too. So it's like you have people that represent certain people from your family.
Yep.
And then I don't remember the details, because that's like at least 20 years ago.
Come on, you didn't know back then I was going to ask you about it today?
No, I didn't. You did not give me a list of topics that you were going to talk about. So, and then, you know, the therapist who did that with us just put people behind that person that was representing my mother. Mm-hmm. And that was just a sign, that's what I remember, of like many, many generations of abuse. So that's when it became clear. Yeah, that's why she couldn't do it. And, you know, it's also such a fascinating thing. I was once standing in for a father, for someone, and I really felt like a dad, like that had a different energy than me being a mom. And it was so fascinating to feel that, how that works, the energetics of it all. Yeah, so that's all I remember right now. Sorry, I can't.
No, you're good. What do you know about the generational trauma piece? How was your family impacted by World War II?
Both my parents, of course, lived in Germany, but in small towns, very, very small towns. So nothing big happened there. And my parents are really they never talked about anything. There was never real conversation happening about topics in our family at all, like at all. So I don't know much. I just know my mom is born at the end of the war. And my father, I know that they were hiding people on the, it was a farm, on that farm, but that's all I know. They were young, they didn't go to war. And mm-hmm. I know my grandfather from my father's side, he was in the First World War, and he was the most scary person to me mm-hmm. when I was there. I mean, I was so scared of him, really. I remember when he was like in the process of passing, that my parents told me, I was like maybe 8 or 7. Oh, that's a memory I have. Told me to go him and hug him. And I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. And I don't know what was going on there. And never had a conversation with my parents about it. Yeah, they're just not that kind of people.
I have this, I'll send it to you. I interviewed this guy who was a writer, but his mom, so he's Jewish. His mom was a little girl in Paris. They were Polish. But when the Nazis came and was rallying everybody up in Paris, his mom and his grandma, they got away. Like, they basically said to one of the Nazis, she was like, can I go across the street and get a loaf of bread? And the guy was kind of like giving, like, yeah, go ahead. And they ran, and they were in hiding all over the place. They ended up, I think, in the Italian Alps. And so when she was dying, he asked her, will you write your story? And so she wrote like over 100 pages, and then she passed and he didn't read them. He kept them away for a long time. And then he eventually read them. If anybody hasn't listened, go listen to this episode, guys. I'll go put it in the show notes. It was like early on. So then he ended up reading them, and she detailed like everywhere that they had gone. And she said the name of this village that they had been hiding in last. And so he went over to Europe to do like a book tour, and he was going to be near this Italian village. He was going to go drive. And so he told his publisher, I'm going to go. And he's like, I'll come with you. And then this other guy decided to come too. And they're driving in the car. And then it turns out that both of these guys, their parents had been in the SS.
Oh my gosh.
And they were coming because they felt like they were like paying amends. And they drove to this small town, and they found the son of the person that had hidden his mom. And they all sat around and talked.
Oh, what a beautiful, beautiful healing process that they did there by meeting all and talking about it. And so
when you were growing up as a kid, what were you taught about the Holocaust?
Yeah, in Germany, there was like this whole, Germany feels... that's also the difference to the US. Maybe it has changed in the last years, but when I grew up, there was this big cloud of guilt over the overarching heaviness, like this cloak of guilt.
It's crazy when you think about it. It really wasn't that long ago.
It wasn't that long ago. And in Germany, it was all about like owning up to that happened, that German did that. And the only thing I remember from being taught history in school is that time. Like, it was like drilled into us, like how bad the Germans were. I mean, it was really bad. I don't want to neglect
that.
Yeah. But it almost, you know, when I did my first trip to the US after my bachelor exam, and I was on the East, I was traveling the East Coast with my cousin. And it's like, each time someone asked me where I'm from and I was German, I was ashamed. German. I was 23 years old or 22 years old. I was ashamed of being German, especially when I talked to a Jewish person, because I was so hyper aware of all of that and felt really, really bad. And, you know, after a while, of course, you learn that's my heritage. I didn't do that, but I felt this guilt that was like the heavy blanket over like Germany. Yeah. So it was drilled into us, like really drilled into us. And yeah. And of course it was a big thing. It was the most cruel, and I don't even know what to name it, thing. And today I can say it wasn't me who did that. But I was so ashamed at that time. Gosh. And of course, all my other unhealed shame was also weaved into that.
Do you make good spätzles?
Spätzle? No, I don't. I have never.
I want you to make me some red cabbage and spätzles.
Oh, I can. I can probably find a recipe. But it's like more the southern part of Germany where that's a famous thing. And where people
what are you eating up there? What's your, from where you're from, what are the cuisine? What's the cuisine?
Oh, gosh.
I love German food.
It's like, you know, it's like this bratwurst thing, like what people think it is here, and like mashed potatoes and like, I don't know, cabbage or something. I don't know that there's this typical German thing. Like the schnitzel is also another thing. Mm-hmm. People always think, and of course we ate all these things. I'm from the northern part, like 2 hours from Hamburg. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know if there's Grünkohl und Pinkel. I mean, it's like a certain...
What the fuck is that?
It's kale and... kale and a certain type of
like sausage.
Sausage, yeah, it tastes really great. That was something that was cooked in the winter, like as a stew, and it was really hearty. That's what I would say is a typical thing for more for the north.
Do you ever make German food?
I wouldn't say. I mean, I cook. Yeah, I cook I cook everything, and I wouldn't say. Typical German thing. I use kale, but not in that way with that sausage because you can get it here. I don't do spätzle. I never do schnitzel. So I don't know. I cook everything.
So tell everybody what you got to offer, what you'd be doing. How can they find you?
They can find me on my website, maria-jansen.com. I'm in the process of creating a new one with more of the focus on trauma than my current one has. And through that, they can find me. They can schedule a free 30-minute clarity call to see what I offer and if we are a good fit. I work in 1, 2, 3 month increments with people, and one theme or pattern or what problem I've never experienced that it takes longer than 3 months. And I have a certain structure of how I work and incorporate all my tools, but that's what I offer, the one-on-one healing work. And I'm in the process of creating a little bit larger program, like for a group of 8 or so, but I'm not there yet. I got so busy with my one-on-one clients that I knew I needed to do that, but I didn't find the time yet to put it all into place.
Plenty of time, lady.
Yeah, I love, love, love doing this work. And I am so humbled to witness the transformations my clients have and to be holding the space for them to find who they really are. And, you know, I naturally attracted people with quite severe trauma from the beginning. And when I worked with a niche coach and all that, they told me, yeah, you already have your niche. That's what you're doing. It's because you went through it yourself and I can hold this space for it. And I don't get triggered or anything. And yeah, it's just so amazing. I helped a woman just yesterday who has huge abandonment and neglect issues. And we did, the first month was all about finding out why she feels like there must be something wrong with her, that her whole family is just using her. She was like the over-giving, over-pleasing person and had so many sicknesses herself because she was neglecting herself. That's all changed. But what she was holding on to was the resentment and anger towards all of them. So we healed that yesterday because under anger is always pain. And yesterday she processed all the pain that was below. I texted with her before and she said she has so much energy and she's, yeah, it's just, I love it. It's my purpose.
Mm, I love that. We can all find it.
Yeah. Isn't that so amazing? The more you heal, you find it naturally. It's my experience with myself, but also with my clients. They find it in the process and you have found yours clearly. I mean, I love listening to your podcast.
Thank you.
Everybody should, who has some trauma in their background.
Yeah, what the fuck? Listen to my shit, you peeps.
Yes.
Well, thank you. We'll have to have you back. We just scratched the surface. There's plenty more to talk about.
Yeah, we...
Well, that wraps up today's episode. As always, I hope you heard something that you can relate to. As always, I know you did. And as always, if you did not, seek help. Thanks again to Maria. That was awesome. So I actually just signed up today with Maria. I'm going to start working with her next week. So I'm pumped about it. You know, they say that we've had a couple people on the podcast talk about how the most important thing about finding a therapist is finding somebody that you feel safe with and seen. And I feel that way with her, and I'm always looking to grow more and, you know, peel more layers of the onion. So, I'm excited to start working with her, and I will keep y'all posted on how that goes. But in the meantime, go check out, if you want to go find her, follow her, work with her, go check out, the show notes for all of that information. What else do I want to say? Just want to express my gratitude again to all of you guys. I feel so grateful that we've all found each other. Sandra said something in the group today. What did she say? All of our childhood experiences that have brought us together so that we can all show each other love and, acceptance and, I don't know what else you said, Sandra. It was it was a lot more eloquent than what I'm saying. But that really is the gift of, I think, of all of our pain is the connection that comes through healing, right? I just think that when you've suffered, when you've been through a shitload of pain, the connection that comes from healing with those who know your pain is such, it's priceless. It's truly priceless. So I will see you shit shows next week for another fucking amazing episode of Adult Child. It's going to be super, super fun ball. Super excited for you out of here. It's going to be a goodie. I promise. Let it all go. What's making you slow now? Just let it all go.